this is in the volume 4, and this is, I just lost the place, on the 13th day of Nisan, Baruch Hashem, Yud Gimel Nisan. And the Rebbe starts off with peace and blessing. And the Rebbe says, it was very pleasant for me to hear from our good friend, and the Rebbe titles him Rebbe Nyamin Sheyichya Garadetsky. Rebbe Nyamin Garadetsky was actually the Chabad representative for all the activities that took place in North Africa and in France, basically all of Europe. He was the Rebbe's representative, and he would report back to the Rebbe of the various different activities. So the Rebbe is saying now that I was very sort of pleased to hear about your dedicated and your and the work that you're doing to support and to spread Torah in general, and especially your participation in our educational work that we do in the institution of Ole Yosef Yitzchak Lubavitch. That was the name of all the various different general umbrella name for all the various schools they opened up, as we were reading in some of the previous letter, in Morocco, in Tunisia, in the other those areas. And that was a time in which the religion was really fading away. A lot of the leadership over there has either passed on. Some of them started to migrate to Eretz Yisrael, to Israel. A lot of them, this was already after the after the founding of the State of Israel. So they started to move there, and the masses were left without really any educational system. And the Rebbe, started from the previous Rebbe, but we learned that the Rebbe, who was almost the previous Rebbe before his passing, spoke to the Rebbe about doing this work, and it was sort of his last will, his wishes. And the Rebbe went and initiated it and got people. And so apparently that this fellow, this person that Rebbe's writing, he doesn't say his name, apparently he was a supporter, looks like that he was a supporter for the Rebbe's work. And the Rebbe spoke in other letters that we read that for very small money, basically, you can help, you know, hundreds of kids over there to provide them some Jewish education so that they remain, because especially in the Sephardi community, this is what I'm saying, it's not in the letter here, they were very deeply rooted and had the very sound belief in God and the Torah. So they were like very strong in, as far as that goes, maybe a little bit more than even the European Jews. But then they didn't have any means of...
I have someone else coming. That's what Thursday's coming.
Someone else?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And she'll do a very good job.
Okay.
So and it'll probably cost me 3 times, but we know. All right, so what's that number here, the address?
162.
162, okay, thank
you. So the Rebbe says, my hope is, and this gives me strength, that you will continue with even more effort, more diligent in your holy work, so that we can increase the Torah and we can widen, do what Nilag V'Tor L'Adira. He says, it's known, there's a statement from the Zohar, which is the basic book of the Kabbalah. So over there, the Sages tell like this, it talks about eating matzah. Also keep in mind that this letter was written just 2 days before Passover. It's the 13th of Nisan. So the Rebbe always ties it into the time of the year that he's writing the letter. So over there it says, with regards to eating of matzah, it says, there was a king who had an only son that became sick. And one day, he wanted to eat something. So they said, let your son eat a food that will give him healthy. Let him eat a healthy food to strengthen him. So the equation of the Zohar is, when the Jewish people went out of Egypt, we're like an only child to God. And when we went out of Egypt, we were very sick because we didn't have our freedom. We were slaves. We were under the dominance of the Egyptians. So we were like very sick. We were very weak. So therefore, God says, I want to give them something of healing. That's where matzah comes in, because the matzah that we eat on Pesach is a matzah of strength. It's a matzah that has all the vitamins in addition to the carbs, but it has all the vitamins and it has all the
fiber,
spiritual,
keep you regular,
spiritual, yeah, spiritual needs.
Right.
Well, it beats eating bread. No?
That's why they call matzah the bread,
less,
bread,
yeah,
of affliction.
Yeah.
Bread of affliction.
So he said like this: as we are standing, when Pesach comes in. So each Jewish person, what is the first thing we do by the Seder? We make a proclamation. We say, "Kol dichfin yesev yechal." Anybody who's hungry, let them come in and let them eat. That's our declaration. So this doesn't mean just to provide them with physical food, but actually it also means to provide for them food that provides for healing, and also food that provides for belief, that strengthens the belief. Because the two nights of Pesach, the first one is a food of healing, and the second one is a food of belief, which means that eating the matzah actually helps you in your belief and trust in Hashem. So that you have the only son. So God looks at us as only children. And there's people out there that are tremendously yearning to taste a little bit of Yiddishkeit. They want to have a little bit of food that is going to strengthen their neshama, their souls. So therefore, this causes a tremendous pleasure to God, to our Father in Heaven, because we are providing for His children, we are giving them their needs, what they need. We're opening up our Seder by saying, whoever wishes, come and eat. We're providing for them, for their spiritual needs. So he says, Rebbe said, how great is hidden in this activity for now and for the future to all those that are working and occupied in the field of education, to educate the sons and daughters, Jewish boys and girls, in a kosher education, especially to those who are standing on the top, the leaders of it. As our sages tell us, Kohen Gadol Noitel Chelek Berosh, the high priest takes the part in the very beginning, which means basically, halachically, it means that there is a certain order of distribution, because when they brought the sacrifices in the temple, so some of the sacrifice, or most of the sacrifices, had certain parts that went to the various different Kohanim. So we have, like, the person who actually brought the offering, the Kohanim that actually worked, they would get, or the Kohanim that served at a certain, they had rotations, so they would get the food from the people that they would bring the offerings. But everybody, there was an order, and then there was a lottery system, there was various kinds of way, the way they would distribute it. But the Kohen Gadol, meaning the high priest, he can take without any order, without any lottery. He can come in, the high priest, whenever he comes, he can take at the top, right in the beginning. He doesn't have to wait for his turn. He doesn't have to wait for distribution. He has the rights to take whatever. That he is the high priest. That's the honor for him. So the Rebbe basically saying, also metaphorically, applying this, that the Kohen Gadol is the person that provides, the head of the schools and those who are providing this education. So all the blessing that God gives, they take a part right in the beginning. They don't have to wait to get a small part, but they actually get the blessings in a very full measure. And the Rebbe says, I want to bless you and all those that are working with you, a blessing of a kosher and a happy holiday, and all good that is visible, and from the soul to the flesh. And quickly, very soon in our days, let our request be fulfilled, that the coming year, Lashon HaBa, we should be in the land of Israel and free people through Mashiach Tzidkenu. I send my peace and my goodness for all days to you. And the Rebbe sent a similar kind of a letter. It says here, this is what the Rebbe sent out to the rabbis in Morocco of the time. They were very hospitable, and I don't think that they were very threatened. Sometimes, you know, you come in Chabad came into these different places, Morocco and then in Tunisia, but sometimes they're not greeted with open arms because it becomes like political, it becomes competition, or it becomes situations where people feel threatened with somebody else, a new kid on the block coming in and maybe doing other things. But I think that they were very welcoming, the Moroccan rabbis, and they were very welcoming, and they lended the support also to the Rebbe and to the institution, because they realized that this was actually Hatzolos Nefoshes, who was saving the generation. And many of the rabbis now from the Moroccan communities were educated in those yeshivas, in those schools, in that educational system that was started by the Rebbe that we're learning now. And for many generations later on, they continue the traditions. And one of the things also about Chabad, they don't impose, I mean, people on their own want to do, but they don't impose their traditions or their custom on other people. So like Chabad had a lot of respect for the Sephardic traditions. It may not be the exact same as the Ashkenazi traditions, but the Rebbe didn't want them to change their traditions. They should keep on. And actually, the Rebbe, in some of the letters we read, the Rebbe said they should have some of their people going to getting the education so that their people, who they're comfortable with, will continue their beautiful tradition and legacy. So it's not like it has to be my way, it has to be the traditional way, yes, but in the various different kinds of customs and traditions, everybody should do their ways. And you would find, like in I think in Chabad more than any other group, I'm not sure exactly, but you would find a good mixture of all kinds of backgrounds of Jews, and they're all accepted. In some in Israel, there's known that there is some discrimination going on in some yeshivas against some from the Sephardic background, sometimes really? From other backgrounds, and like in the seminaries, in the various different institutions of higher learning, and there is actually many lawsuits brought, and there's a lot of situations in which people complain bitterly that their children are discriminated against, you know, and it's even worse than when you're discriminated against as an adult for a job, but when your child goes to school and all of a sudden they find out because of the skin color, they're not going to accept them. And we're talking about a Torah institution, we're talking about Haredi, that's very disheartening. But in Chabad, there is no such a thing.
They have a Sephardic rabbi.
No, they do, yeah, they do have one-on-one. They want to abolish that. In a way, that creates separation. We are one people. And we talked about yesterday about the menorah having seven branches, but it all comes from one and the same piece. So it's really, we have to remember, we may be Sephardi, Ashkenazi, Hasidic, Litva, whatever group we belong to, but Jews. We have to know that we come, in essence, we come from the same source, and we should all learn how to get along with each other instead of fighting each other sometimes. But the point that I'm trying to say is, Morocco and Tunisia, other places, these were totally Sephardic Jews over there. That's where Sephardic Jews. And the people that worked with them were all Ashkenazi, the Chabad. These were real Ashkenazi Jews. And yet they got along very well and they educated them. And they're responsible. Chabad is responsible for raising a whole generation. The opposite happened when they came to Israel.
Trying to make them.
That's right. The secular Israel, some of the leadership had taken the Sephardic children that came from the different countries, from Yemen, from Iraq, from Algeria, from Iraq, and try to make them Israelis. And when they handed up, they tried to tear them away. They cut their payas down. They tried to make them, modernize them to
fit in.
Or they figured, you know, leave your old-fashioned ways, religion, you know, behind. And what happened is they created a whole generation of unfortunate criminals, because a lot of them were, later on, they found themselves sort of in the middle because they tore them away from Yiddishkeit. They didn't substitute them and something. And then they had a lot of, you know, a lot of problems later on with some of them. I'm not saying that there was a disproportionate amount of yeah. negative effects that and it affected poverty. Those people and poverty and the same the other ways instead of but I think
yeshivas?
It's but it, again yeah now they have now they have they built it up and some of our most respected rabbis come from the Sephardic communities. The Rambam, you know, the Ramban. We have the greatest scholars and the greatest teachers are from. So there's no discrimination. I mean, as far as Torah and religion, there is really no discrimination. But, not only that, they are actually all the Kabbalists. That's why Chabad does the Nusach Sephard, because all the Kabbalists were all. Mainly, they were from Sephardic origin.
Well, this is Nusach Sephard.
Yeah, we got based on the Nusach Ari Sephard. It's a particular direction within Sephard itself.
Because I thought Ari was
Ari himself was Ashkenaz, right. But he was a Kabbalist and he followed the Kabbalah. So our teachings go according to the Kabbalah, even though we're all Ashkenazim, but we still use the Sephardic basically.
I have friends in Montreal. There's a huge Sephardic community there, because you know they're French speaking and they come from all. They have a few big shuls that are. Yeah.
We learned yesterday also in the letter of the Rebbe that a family was trying to settle in Canada, and we assumed that you know it wasn't easy to settle. A lot of the immigrants, United States didn't let them in. Canada was easier to get in. Some of these people came in
through
Canada because they were allowed in there. Other places weren't allowed.
Was Rashi considered Sephardic from France?
No, Rashi was Ashkenaz. Rashi, the Baal HaTos was Ashkenaz because he was from France. You know, France and the Worms, Germany.
Ashkenaz.
No, these were Ashkenaz. But the counterparts, you know, the yeshiva, the Tosfos are Ashkenazi but you have rabbis on both sides. It was mutual respect. You never even heard of, you know, any degrading comment of any. I think it more has to do because generally the Arab countries, the Muslim countries in the last couple hundred years, they were behind as far as the advancement of technology and advancement of science and things like that. So they're considered to be a little behind as far as their ideas.
But didn't they persecute the Sephardic Jews in a lot of these Arab countries like Syria?
Sometimes it was better. Sometimes Jews lived better in the Sephardic countries than in the under the Muslims. They lived better than under the Christians. You know, I mean, sometimes you know the Crusaders. We had a lot of problems with them. And
do they have a Sephardic shul in Boston?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
But it's not so much divided by Sephardic and.
There's one right behind the Rebbe.
That's the Sephardic congregation. Rabbi Hamawi.
Rabbi who?
Hamawi.